Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm your host, Chris Stanis, and also the founder of Woman of Wisdom. And we have our 28th annual Woman of Wisdom Conference coming up very soon in Seattle, February 14th through the 16th. Our theme this year is Radiate Loving Harmony, Unite Our World. We're very excited to have some special guests this year, including Jean Shinoda Bolin, Gina Salah, Sarah Beek, Isadora Leidenfrost, and Wendy Rule. Wendy's going to be starting our conference off with a special Valentine's Day concert on February 14th. That's also open to men. So today, I'm interviewing one of our workshop presenters, Lucinda Herring. She will be presenting a workshop, Reimagining Death. Lucinda Herring has worked at the cutting edge of the green funeral movement for more than 20 years. Today, she is one of the leading voices for more healing and ecological ways to care for our dead. Lucinda is a home funeral green disposition consultant and guide, an interfaith minister, and a licensed green funeral director in the state of Washington. She offers advanced aftercare death planning, home funeral green disposition education and trainings, and celebrant ministerial services for families and communities who are claiming their innate right to care for each other and the earth at the end of life. Lucinda is also a storyteller, festival maker, and writer, committed to bringing art, beauty, ritual, and celebration to all of life's thresholds. She's also the author of the new book, Reimagining Death, Stories and Practical Wisdom for Home Funerals and Green Burials. You can read all about her on her website. It is lucindaherring.com. So welcome, Lucinda.
Hi, Chris. So nice to be here.
Yes. So tell us about your book, Reimagining Death, why you wrote this, and why you're doing this work to help families and communities to reclaim their right to care for their own dead.
I'm just thinking as I'm sitting here with you that I was part of the first Women of Wisdom, or one of the first, and
it was the first year. Yes.
I think I taught about bringing the art of celebration to families and communities through celebrating the festivals of the year, and I realized that, in a way, I'm still doing that, helping families and communities bring that same art of celebration, even celebration, to death itself, to a different threshold. Certainly bringing art and ritual and ways to care for ourselves and each other when someone we love dies. So that's the work I've been doing in the last 15 to 20 years. And it's been important work and pioneering work and hard work, but has made me pretty passionate about helping people understand that we have different options when we die than just simply calling the funeral home, and that we really can receive so many gifts by taking back some of that sacred task of caring for our own dead ourselves. And so I was lucky to write the book. I was actually lucky to be asked by North Atlantic Books, who's a wonderful publisher, non-profit publisher in Berkeley. They asked me if I would write a book about my work. They wanted someone who was working in the trenches to try to articulate this need in our society, and to help change the paradigm of how we're doing death.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I was thinking about this, that I imagine our grandparents probably, they did care for their loved ones in after death, and had the bodies in the home, cared for them, prepared the bodies, all that. You know, it's just been 100 years since, and then we shifted to everything had to be done by funeral homes.
That's right, yes. And it's interesting how that 100 years has, because we've had so much change in that 100 years, I think we just don't really question anymore this way that we are turning to the funeral industry to help us after someone dies. When I talk about this with people, people sort of glaze over and, you know, and think, look at me and say, well, I didn't know there was any other option.
Right.
So part of my writing the book is to help people know that there are other options, and certainly there are other options now, even with choosing how you dispose of your body. And part of the book is really working with the environmental impact of how we're doing death in the funeral industry and the practices of the industry and how they're not sustainable for the earth and for us in the future.
And yeah, I'd love for you to share that, because I think that's what people don't know, what, you know, when we, even cremation causes pollution and caskets in the ground. So I'd love for you to share what the impact that has on our environment.
Okay, so it's hard to talk about, you know, the impact of cremation because so many of us are choosing it and have to choose it economically. So I always put a caveat before and say, if you are going to choose cremation, and many of us will, that at least try to work with a funeral home who does some kind of carbon footprint offset. So for every cremation, they plant a tree or something. There are funeral homes in Seattle now who do that, a Sacred Moment, Char Barrett, and Elemental, Jeff Jorgensen. Anyway, you can Google it. But the sad reality is that cremation is really not sustainable for our future, particularly because of climate change, because it spews so much CO2 and other harmful emissions into the air. Washington is one of the leading states in the country for the percentage of cremations, and we have very poor air quality because of it, and no one really knows that. And it's a way of disposing of bodies that's completely dependent on fossil fuels and oil, and if we're going to move away from that to more renewable resources, we can't keep choosing cremation. The other way is conventional burial, and by conventional I mean the way that people are buried now because of the policies of funeral industry practices, where there's often a requirement to have a cement vault, and, you know, people are encouraged to buy these very elaborate steel gasketed caskets and endangered wood caskets, and people are embalmed, which is very, very toxic, not only to the earth, the ground, but to the funeral directors themselves, who are embalmers. The pesticides on our cemetery lawns are terrible. I mean, in essence, this is terrible to say, but our cemeteries are toxic landfills. And so we're really having to look again at that, and that's part of my work in the green funeral movement and what I wrote about extensively in my book.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you know, then what do you do? It's the question. What choices can you make? And so that is what I'm working with in the green funeral movement, is to help people understand that there are choices. We're going back to burying our dead in more natural and non-toxic ways, with natural burial sites. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of green burial sites in the Seattle area, but we're working on that. And then we're very fortunate in Washington that two other ways of caring for our bodies have been legalized just this past spring. One is water cremation or aquamation, where the body is dissolved basically in water and potassium hydroxide and then dehydrated. And that's called alkaline hydrolysis, the actual scientific process. And then the other really very exciting one is Recompose, which is a vision of Katrina Spade. And she remarkably has made that possibility happen. In Seattle, we'll be the first in the world to offer composting our bodies, composting human bodies, and literally transforming our bodies, bones and all, into very nutritional compost. And that facility will hopefully, all things going well, open as early as next year, 2021.
That's amazing, and I think people would be very interested in that. Given, I mean, especially Seattle area, we're so environmental conscious, I know for some people have a hard time with this because you know you really have to wrap your head around, and I think it all ties to all our fears around death and dead bodies and all that we kind of have to overcome those feelings, but. It's the reality.
You do. It's actually, I'm glad you brought that up and said that, because all of this, you know, is asking us to, one, start talking about the death itself and gather together with each other and groups to have the courage to even open the doorway, you know, and think about these things and figure out what we really want, what would most align with our lifestyle, like, you know, so many people in Seattle are environmental, and so you make all these choices in your life, and then when you die, you don't choose an ecological way to dispose of your body, so that's hard, you know, so all of these questions are important to contemplate, but it's also not that easy, you know, it's not that easy to do it, so we need to support each other in the work, and one reason I wrote the book and one reason I'm coming to do a workshop at Women of Wisdom is that I want to gather in, you know, a circle of women and really support each other to open to this these questions and the beauty, the possibility of reimagining how we've been doing it and find ways that are much more nourishing and much more healing and creative, and that call out the best in each of us and call out our own natural instincts and wisdom. Because I truly believe, having worked in death so long now, that we have that capacity and that we're longing to give that capacity and that beauty and creativity to our loved ones when they die.
Yes, I want to get into that too. So one of the things is... and I've heard this term too, a death doula, and then has been part of come into the mainstream lately, and then also working as a home funeral and green burial guide, that there are resources out there that people can turn to, and one of the things that you're talking about is creating a team of people, loved ones of the person who's passed away, to be part of this. It's not just on, it doesn't have to be just on your shoulder. You know, if my husband was to die, I don't think that I have to do this all, which would seem overwhelming. So talk a little bit about that. And I know you have some fabulous stories of experiences that you've had.
Yeah. So, I'm also not only a home funeral guide and green burial guide, but I'm also a licensed funeral director in Washington. And I became one because I was helping families in this way. I've been doing that really quietly since 1997 on Whidbey Island and in the Seattle area. But I found in my work that I was constantly calling one Char Barrett at a sacred moment and asking her how to help families in a way that was, you know, of course, within the law. And I realized that I finally needed to become a licensed funeral director, so that I wouldn't have to always be in relationship to questioning how we care for our own dead, ourselves as families and communities. And so that brings up the whole thing with the death doulas. The death doula has become a kind of catch-all term for anyone working at end of life. But in fact, it's unfortunate that it has, because the doula work is mostly focused on what I would call the first stage of death threshold, which is the stage of dying, actively dying. So hospice is in that first stage. Doulas are now being called in, and it's really a wonderful thing that they are, because they're providing more spiritual care and more hands-on care of the dying and helping families in ways that hospice, you know, has been limited because of their own financial restraints and economical structures and things. But doulas are kind of, some trainings are helping, are training people, doulas, to also help families after death, and that has become problematical in some people who have, who, as doulas, decided that they can help someone after death as well, not understanding that once someone dies, you enter the realm of law and jurisdiction and regulatory policies of the funeral industry, and that you can't offer those services as a doula or even as a home funeral guide without understanding what it means to work legally with someone. And so that's an interesting development that we're working on to make sure that there's clarity there. So that's one of the differences. Let's see, what was the other question you asked me?
Oh, about creating a team to support you. You've done rituals around it. You've helped people create, let's talk about, creating the shrouds and creating beauty around this body so you could celebrate this person.
Okay, so I want to say one thing more I realize is important based on what I just talked about with the difference between doulas and home funeral guides and funeral directors. It's really helpful to know, and hardly anyone knows this, is that it's legal in every state of our country for families to care for their own dead, and it's legal for a family to act as licensed funeral director themselves, and that's an amazing thing. There are 9 states where the funeral industry has legislated enough that they have to be involved with families doing this in ways like transporting or doing the paperwork, the legal paperwork. But in essence, families can care for their own dead, and that's important to know. And really, all my work is helping families know that they can do this and empowering them to do so. And the best way to do it is, like you were saying, some of my consultation work is that if someone wants a home vigil, which means that they're going to be cared for after death, not sent to a funeral home right away, then I work with the family to ask, who is the team? Who is the team? Who will be there no matter what, to the best of their ability, when you die? Are they willing to take on this additional task, sacred task, but an additional task after you die, to help you stay at home for a time and to have a more natural and alternative death, basically. Unfortunately, it's alternative still in our society. So I work with the team in that way. I help them understand the really deep practicalities needed, how do you do the paperwork, how you keep a body cool after death with dry ice or techni ice. Some of these things I will be going over in my workshop. And I also really encourage people to, what I say, reimagine. Imagine, hopefully with some kind of joy and, possibility of what one would really want and what would mean the most to a person when they die. Like, what would that look like? And one of those elements is that people are looking at more natural containers, either to be buried in or cremated in. And one of them is a shroud, because that's coming back into, I would say, vogue almost. It's becoming certainly an interest of others to have a shroud, either to be buried naturally in a green burial plot, not in a casket, just in the shroud, or to have a beautiful shroud where you lie in state during the vigil, or to have be shrouded in a cremation container when you're cremated. And there'll be shrouds, if you're composted, if you're recomposed, that your body will be in a shroud. So there's wonderful creative opportunities, to make your own shroud, to work with those who can make one, to choose the kind of fabric that you love. There was a amazing thing that happened in our community here when Charlie Murphy died. Probably people listening to this interview will know Charlie Murphy. He was part of the Rumors of the Big Wave in the 80s in Seattle, and he went on to create amazing Power of Hope arts camps for the youth all around the world. And he was beloved by so many people. And when he died here, his friends and community asked for people from all over the world to write messages of love and support for him and for his partner, Eric. And this artist here on Whidbey took those messages and printed them on this beautiful white silk. And then Eric and his friends wrapped Charlie in that silk as a shroud. And basically he was wrapped with all the words of love and wisdom from thousands of people, really, around the world. That was his shroud. So that just shows you the possibilities, you know, of authentic and beautiful ritual that can happen when people are given the opportunity to bring their hearts and their creativity to this sacred task.
Yes, that's beautiful. And I know, you've been involved with, I think it even started out for you with family members that you had to care for and even have to figure out how to transport from one state to another, which is legal.
Yes.
I remember you saying that you can transport a body to have the burial where they want it.
Yes, so that just happened this past year with my brother-in-law, where he was dying tragically of ALS, and he asked me if I would help him have a 3-day vigil in his home in Asheville and then transport his body, not cremated, but his body across 3 state lines and bury him on our land in Alabama. And I was able to do that. That happened in May, and that's a remarkable story that hopefully I'll be able to share at the workshop in greater detail. But I want to say for this interview that families cannot transport their own dead unless they have filed a death certificate properly and have what's called a burial transit permit in the car with the body when you're transporting it. And so it's very important to know that you can't just put someone in the car and drive them anywhere, that you have to legally do the paperwork and do it in a way that then is the right way to transport someone. And I had to do that in Asheville with Stu's death. And unfortunately, he died on Memorial Day weekend. And so it's much more difficult for families to do their own paperwork if such a death, you know, if it happens on a holiday like Stu's did. And so I was just deeply blessed that I know people all across the country in this movement. And I knew Carolyn Young, who is head of a conservation burial ground and a home funeral guide in Asheville. And she has worked for years with a funeral director there. And he trusts her deeply and supports this kind of work of families doing this. And so he met me on a weekend, Memorial Day, and helped me get the burial transit permit. And that was just an amazing gift. And also, just to be clear, too, that here in Washington, we cannot bury our dead on our own land.
I was going
to
ask you that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most of the West Coast, most states, well, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of states, particularly on the West Coast, you cannot bury on your own land because the actual laws were of the funeral industry and legislature were created much later because our states were formed much later. So the laws in Alabama really are from, you know, the 19th century when people had land and they always buried their dead on their own land. So Alabama still has those laws that allow us, and so does North Carolina. Some of the East Coast has that capacity, but we don't out here. So it's important to know that we can't do what I did with Stu out here.
Do you think that that could change with, you know, we're already changing the laws of adding these new kinds of the cremation, other than cremation?
I think it's possible. It's not likely anytime soon. There's not people working for that. Necessarily, you know, it's quite challenging. I mean, it's not that you can't do it here, but you have to literally form a cemetery, and there are all kinds of red tapes, and you have to come up with $25,000 up front. You have to, you know, establish it as a cemetery. You have to have a way to preserve that cemetery. It changes the nature of your land, right? So, you know, if you ever want to sell your land, you're dealing with all kinds of complications that you wouldn't have otherwise. All of those things make great obstacles for burying on your own land here, unfortunately.
Yes.
But
yes.
I never want to say never, you know, with everything changing. It's possible. I mean, one of the things that I'm really working deeply with is this idea of conservation burial grounds, where we're actually preserving land that would otherwise be developed by making it a place where bodies are buried. And if someone has land, then they could donate that land to a conservation burial effort and work with the conservation organization and get a conservation easement. To me, that is a one solution, you know, to... So if you do own land, then that is a way to think about being buried there yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're really establishing a burial ground, right?
Right.
You're not just burying someone in your backyard.
Yeah. So, and you're talking about a green burial, like, you know, burying a body in a shroud and putting them in the ground. And so there's actually, I think I've heard you say that there's very few places where we can do that. They're getting, people are buying up these spots faster than what's available.
That's exactly right. Unfortunately, really unfortunately, because so many people are wanting this more natural burial option. And now that my book's out, you know, that's even more true. Like, I'm doing these talks everywhere. And I have to say that it's to the audience that, you know, it's limited. It's limited. I mean, one example is that our little cemetery on Whidbey Island was hybrid green, meaning that part of it was we designated as green. And unfortunately, we're completely full because people from the mainland have come over to the island and bought our plots. And that's been a very difficult situation in the community here. We are lucky, though, that we have a wonderful green burial natural burial ground up in Bellingham or Ferndale. That's Green Meadow, and Brian Flowers oversees that. He was director of the Green Burial Council, one of the first ones. He's wonderful. We have that. It's not that far from Seattle. I've helped families in Seattle to get plots there over the years of working in this way. And there's one in Redmond now that is also available. It's very expensive. The plots are very expensive there, but it is available. And then in Snohomish, Woodlawn Cemetery has part of their cemetery designated as green. And then we are greatly fortunate to have two conservation burial grounds in eastern Washington, south in Goldendale, one called White Eagle, and then another one called Herland. So Washington's lucky. It's just that we don't have them. You know, if you emotionally want your loved one to be nearby where you can go visit in the Seattle area, that's not available yet. Yet. I'm going to say yet because I think it's still possible to try to find land outside the city limits.
Right, right. Well, and the other option, these two new things, the aquamation and also the composting one, is fascinating. And
yes. Well,
if you're
really. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm just saying that your body turns to compost. You can then take that and put that in your garden because it's real compost, right?
Yes, absolutely. And you get a metric yard of yourself back, not just a little box like you do in cremation. I mean, that's a lot, a metric yard. So it's amazing. And it's really going to be a necessity. I mean, this shortage of green burial land is just an indication of what's going to happen everywhere because of overpopulation, I mean, particularly in urban cities, right? So Katrina's vision and the aquamation vision is a real response to the need for us to do something different even than green burial. And so I've been a deep supporter of both of those, and I write about them in my book because we don't really have endless land available for us all to have our own little real estate plot of burial. That's a different way. We're going to have to reimagine again the future when there's so much overpopulation and so little resources of land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can see things will be shifting faster. They're already shifting with these two. I mean, Washington State having these two new laws approving these
yeah.
methods that are very sustainable. So hopefully other states and other places will catch on to this. So I want to talk about, it kind of relates to our theme. I've been asking all the presenters how the theme works in your workshop, Radiate Loving Energy, Unite Our World. I can definitely see ways, because you're radiating loving energy towards, a loved one that has passed away and taking care of them.
Right.
But also how you see this work as part of the divine feminine returning.
Yes, I love that question. I want to say first that I believe that it's the divine feminine in my own life and soul and heart and dreams that brought me to this work. I write in my book, and I feel it so deeply, that every time we reclaim caring for each other and our loved ones at death, one family at a time, we are bringing a more nourishing and more natural and more healing way of dealing with death back. And to me, that is a deeply, it's divine, this divine feminine speaking. It's the earth herself speaking, bringing the wisdom of that. And the wisdom of that is not only to help us choose more ecological ways to dispose of our bodies and more natural ways to do death, but it's the wisdom that brings us back to ourselves and brings us back to our bodies, which I think is the deep feminine, and brings us back to the earth itself, and to our deep somatic body understanding of what is needed when someone dies, and what we need when we lose someone we love, what we need ourselves when we die. We've lost that wisdom in the way that we've been doing death in the last 100 years, and it's just so vital to reclaim. And so I'm so happy to be able to talk about this and to share it and to have us gather in a way that we are listening to our own wisdom, our own feminine wisdom, to know what to do when we turn toward this contemplation of death. And it's interesting that the movement itself, is almost all women. The whole green funeral movement, the home funeral vigil movement that started in the 90s, and now the death doula movement. I mean, there's thousands of women being drawn to this work. And, you can just hear the goddess, the divine feminine, speaking through these people who are being drawn and who are doing such remarkable work. And interestingly, there's a lot of gay men who are very involved, who have always chosen to be funeral directors. I've always found that very fascinating. And one of the real works that I'm just want to say very clearly here on the interview is that there's still a lot of work to be done, and this feels to me part of the divine feminine to really ask the questions of how this kind of more creative and alternative ways of caring for the dead cannot just be in the realm of the white privileged, you know, families, but is made available to everyone and all the disenfranchised and people of color and transgender, and it's still a deep work to be done in the movement, and I just am so glad that it is, and it's challenging and difficult. I mean, I'm one of the white privileged ones, you know, who is speaking for this, and I just know how important it is to include the questions that that I think the goddess, the deep feminine, wants us to keep asking, you know, how can this be made available not just to the privileged but to everyone who wants to reclaim this sacred task of caring for our own at death. So I'm excited to explore that. Yeah,
thank you so much for the work that you're doing and leading the way and everything you've shared today. There is somebody who's called in, and I'm just going to see, I might put this person on, and maybe there's somebody here who has a question for you. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, so,
right.
Did you have a question for Lucinda?
Well, I was just listening. Basically, I was just listening, and I was just curious as to how do you care for someone that's already transitioned to the spirit realm where you can't see them any longer?
Okay, so how long do I have, Chris?
Well, I had a short time. It's a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Well,
okay.
That's
a big question, but it's a great question. I don't know if you're asking how do you care for someone spiritually or how do you care for somebody, their body itself, after they die.
Well, I have a very short time. Okay, well, I know that, you know, that I'm not trying to copy somebody else outside of myself. I'm not trying to copy them. And I don't want people to copy me, but I want people to feel me on the inside. So that would be a mirroring effect. That would be a heart to heart with no ego in the way. I care for people in that sense, but you were talking about once their physical body goes back into the ground, you're talking about caring for somebody after that?
Yeah, So what I'm doing is I'm helping families realize that they can just take back more time and spaciousness when someone dies instead of immediately calling the funeral home. And you can care for someone for a few hours after they die at home. You can care for them for a few hours in a hospital, if they die in a hospital, provided you're proactive and you talk to the people at the hospital and ask for more time. A lot of my work is helping families and individuals know that we really have the right to ask for more time in order to do what you're saying, in order to be with that person as they transition, in order to companion them, you know, on a spiritual or soul level as they make that transition. And these home vigils that we are reclaiming just give us that time that we need. And there's a very practical way to do that. You have to know how to do that. You have to know how to care for the body. And this is how I train people to understand that, you know, that they can do it, but you have to know how to do it in a good way so that it's a good and nourishing situation rather than a stressful one. So when I say I'm helping people do that, I'm helping them know that it's something that we've lost. We've lost that understanding that the time right after death can be very sacred and very important to the person transitioning, but also to the people left behind. Does that make sense? Hello?
I don't know. He's still on the phone. Well, I would recommend that you get the book Reimagining Death. Lucinda goes into a lot of this, of different ways that you can support the family, and the person who's passed away, their spirit, and holding them in that loving energy. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today, Lucinda.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about it, and I'm so looking forward to the conference.
Yes, and I just know that you're going to go into a lot more detail at the workshop. We have 3 hours, so a lot more hands-on, kind of really getting down into all the different information of what people can do. So I think it's a very important work, and I thank you for that. So everybody, I want to recommend that you check out her book, Reimagining Death, Stories and Practical Wisdom for Home Funerals and Green Burials, and her website, Lucinda Herring, HERRING.com. The book will also be available to purchase at the conference. So check out the website, womanofwisdom.org, for all our events for the weekend, February 14th through the 16th. You can attend Saturday, all the events on Saturday. You get a one-day pass, or Sunday, or you can get a two-day pass. And also Friday night, the concert with Wendy Brule, which is also open to men and everyone. And also, we've just added a special where you could bring a friend, two people go for the two-day pass with share in the expense and with a little bit of savings, and that's a great way to share and join our conference and your experiences with a friend. And it seems like there's one other special. Oh, we added Saturday night. If you just don't have time to go the whole weekend, you can buy a ticket for Saturday night banquet and Jean Shinoda Boland's talk that night. So all that is up on the website. Just go to womanofwisdom.org. Okay, I'll be back to have two more interviews, and then I'm done with all the presenters at Women of Wisdom. That they'll happen this week, and then we look forward to seeing you February 14th through the 16th. Okay, bye for now.